If we look closely at ourselves, at others, and at the world around us, we can see that we are often operating from a place of fear, if not just low-level anxiety and sort of ill-at-easeness. This all-pervasive nature of fear is addressed in the yoga tradition with the concept of abhinivesha and with its fellow cohorts of vidya or limited awareness, asmita, I'mness, and raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion. Abhinivesha rounds out the stable of afflictions that are described in the Yoga Sutra. Fear is not exactly the right translation of abhinivesha, which, if you look at the components of the word itself, has more a sense of from every direction and completely penetrating. And that does describe, I think, our experience at a gut level of what abhinivesha is. It's present in each and every cell, that tendency to preserve life. So in the physical body, for example, your hand will jump away from a hot surface before you even register pain. It's that intrinsically present. It's not necessarily just a conscious reaction, it's an instinctive one. So this all-penetrating self-preservation urge is the foundation for all of the fears that operate in our daily life. All the big and little ones, of course, the biggest one being losing our life, since abhinivesha is about preserving our life. So it's a good thing in the sense that it helps us to be alive and healthy. It's a bad thing when it becomes badly programmed, when our nervous system becomes badly programmed, and we're responding to every situation from a position of fear, reflexively, reactively, as opposed to a measured evaluation of the reality of the situation or the environment. So abhinivesha then acts with the help of the other kleshas to either support our experience of bhoga, our experiences in the world, with the goal of attaining moksha or freedom, apavarga in the Yoga Sutra, or it works to keep us in a very instinctive small cage of our individual identity. It makes us smaller and more contracted as opposed to expanded and aligned with the divine. So it could be either or. And the yoga tradition, of course, is going to offer us some techniques for helping use abhinivesha successfully and also transcending the individual boundaries that it's designed to protect. It's also helpful to consider this self-preservation urge from the perspective of the modern studies of neuroplasticity and of how the mind and the brain work. This instinctive preservation of life, of course, is instinctive. It's a brainstem kind of activity. It's not a sophisticated later cognitive function of cortex. It's a very instinctive kind of urge that we share with, of course, all other life forms. So the problem is when it gets programmed badly and we end up with neural pathways that are wired in a way that are easily activated inappropriately for the situation. So stress, post-traumatic stress, for example, being a classic example. And there's a whole chemistry behind how this, if this inappropriate fear is happening, this inappropriate arousal in the system, and we're unable to close it or to dial it down. And in that situation, if we are unable, either because of our environment constantly being threatening, or, which is more likely, the inability to, it's gotten, our system and our some scars are pushing us in that direction, so we're unable to pull back or to dial down this fear response, essentially, this stress response. We're unable to get out of this mode that there's a vague threat in the world around us all the time. And the thing is that this the negative view of the world is much more powerful than the positive, and it's an adaptive situation again. Because if we are constantly searching for threats, then when there is one, we manage to stay alive. Whereas if we are constantly ignoring threats because we are insisting on everything is fine and divine, then we end up not surviving. So there's a negativity bias in that sense, and we need to work around that. And we need to be able, what we call vagal tone now, or a vagal break, to be able to train the nervous system to be resilient enough that it can absorb the natural and appropriate responses, our threats, but then return to a more balanced state. And that balanced state should become the default mode. And the default mode would be an even, balanced mind that's not being driven by fear and is not under the control of the attachments and the aversions, the searching for opportunities or avoiding of threats, but rather a very even-minded state that allows our discrimination to develop and allows us eventually to be more lined up with higher states of consciousness. And the practices of yoga are all designed to do just that. And it starts right here with working with this abhinavesha, this hardwired kind of nervous condition in the body and mind. And we start by working with the pranic force itself. We start by working with the autonomic nervous system. We start by working with this tendency of the nervous system to get out of balance. And we do that with the practices that we're all familiar with, the asana, the pranayama, the breathing practices that help us to get control over the nervous system, the relaxation practices that keep the mind from wandering and yet also bring us back into a present moment awareness of our experiential self. The meditation process, again, is essential to this whole endeavor where we start to get enough even-mindedness, enough equanimity in the physiology as well as the conscious awareness that we're able to begin to develop discrimination. And from there, we begin to readjust our behavior, our thinking processes, our mistaken notions of self-identity that end up empowering all these other afflictions and causes of our suffering. So it begins right here with the autonomic nervous system and the practices that we know, like all the asana practices that and breathing pranayama practices that address the pranic hub itself and the pranic body itself to create this even flow of prana and an even view in the mind. And from there we begin to move towards the higher states of awareness.